Hello, hello. Welcome back, everybody. Taxation is theft. And I have today with me Victor Hinojosa. Did I say that right?
Yes, sir. Right on the money.
Awesome. Cool. So, Victor, I've had the opportunity to meet him a couple times at the greatest libertarian state convention that there is. And, of course, at the National Convention in New Orleans. And he's pretty new to the party, but he's already doing some pretty big things. So welcome, Victor. What's going on? Tell me what's what's going on in your world. It's a lot.
Well, right now, it's just a lot over here in Corpus Christi. I don't know if you guys saw the news, but we are about a little ways away from Rockport, Texas, which, as you know, a year ago was pretty devastated from the Hurricane Harvey impact. We just had the vice president just come and visit along with the governor. So the communities within our area kind of has a little where everybody's kind of walking on eggshells right now. There's a lot of uneasiness kind of going on here in this area. So we're just kind of utilizing that. We're using the Libertarian Party's message, especially what here in Texas, to kind of be that voice, just to let everyone know that all of the issues that we've had occurring can be fixable, and these are fixable as long as we just kind of utilize our platform and our libertarian message towards it. So that's just awesome. Pretty much what I'm working on right now, along with other things.
So now you told me you're involved with a lot of campaigns, and obviously you've got your Mark Tippetts. Actually, before we get into that, let me just compliment that wonderful hat that you've got on.
Oh, yes, sir. I got it from a very nice guy. I'm sure you know who he is.
Heard of him.
Oh, yeah, he's a pretty nice guy.
So you're working on a lot of different campaigns, and you've got your Mark Tippetts sign back there. So, like, what's kind of your involvement with that? Because you're relatively new to the party. So we were just talking a few minutes ago, and you were saying that you're learning a little bit, but you've got your kind of hands in everything.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. I've had a lot of different canvassing experience. I've kind of used that from whenever I was a little Democrat in high school all the way until I kind of moved a little bit more towards the right side within the past decade. So I've had a lot of different campaign experience. So with the Tippetts campaign, I'm actually the deputy chief of staff. It's an intern position. We're just basically in charge right now getting fundraising. As you know, fundraising has been a major issue with this party in general, just trying to get the funding necessary to try to bring events. So that's kind of what I'm doing with Mark Tippetts right now. Along with that, I'm also the regional coordinator here in the Coastal Bend for Kerry McKinnon. As you know, he's the Libertarian nominee to he's running for lieutenant governor. So I've been working with him. So it's doing really well with that. Also, we're working for our congressional candidate, Libertarian candidate, running for District 27 here for Congress. His name is Daniel Tinnis. So we're just basically getting our work cut out for us over here, especially for my end. But it's been a great experience, man. It's been really great just meeting all of these great people at the convention in Houston. That just kind of motivated me to just want to begin. I've said in a couple of my videos, I just had this giant urge to just begin. Didn't really know how, kind of took the very unorganized approach at going about this, but it's been fun. We're just kind of all over the place.
Yeah, totally. I don't want to say I hate getting involved in like all the political stuff, but like the conventions are definitely like the best part of it. Like there's really just an awesome energy, like hanging out with everybody and, you know, meeting different people who are doing all kinds of different awesome things. So,
I would agree with you. Definitely.
Yeah. So
the energy's real high.
Yeah. We're actually, so there's always been talk about a libertarian cruise, which I don't know if they actually pulled it off, last year or 2 years ago, or not. I've heard some talk about it again this year. I'm kind of at the point where I'm like, man, that really is the best part of the year, is going to the conventions.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah. And plus we're always doing all the, you know, all the busy stuff. So we don't get to go to the talks. We don't, you know, we get to hang out and bullshit with everybody, but it would be awesome just to have like a week with like everybody on a boat, like we could have some speakers and go do all that. And I'm like, man, if nobody pulls that off, like if nobody's planning that right now, I kind of want to do it on my own and just let's put it together, man.
We will get it together. We will get a bunch of volunteers together and we can make it happen. But I kind of understand where you're coming from, Daniel. And one of the greatest things was, like I said, when we're in the body, when everyone has a chance to use parliamentary procedure, we talk about the bylaws and all the stuff. That is a good part of it for me, but also being able to, if we could also have a chance to actually go to these workshops, because they post them on YouTube, so obviously anybody could just watch them later. But
it's so different. It's like not. You don't get to ask questions. The energy is just not there.
Exactly.
It's totally different. But yeah, and you're right. Like even workshop type stuff, like. Just like the exchange of ideas, like there are so many people that, you know, they're not like, you know, the speakers or the leaders or anything like that. But they, at the same time, it's like they have some awesome ideas and they just need to be given like a platform to speak. And, you know, what better place to do that than, you know, just like arranging into small groups and man, you could do like all kinds of crazy, and then like mix it with drinking, like it's more casual, you know.
It's a little more laid back,
which we kind of did anyway.
Oh yeah, both conventions.
Yeah, they had the bar open there at like 9 a.m. in New Orleans. That was pretty cool.
And you know what I really liked, man, is that people utilized it. People really took advantage of it. As soon as it was open, a lot of people were just finishing breakfast. Why not grab yourself a cocktail?
Yeah, a Bloody totally. Mary.
It was great. Totally.
So now you said you're also in school and you're working on a PhD in political science.
I'm trying to. Well, actually, I've begun the process of going towards a PhD. And one of the processes to that is getting a master's. So that's what I have officially graduated with right now. So in order for me to continue to get into the actual PhD process, I would have to pass what's called a graduate record examination, the GRE, which is it's a stupid test. It's kind of like comparing one's intelligence to the SAT, the ACT, you know, all these little tests that they make you catch a certain percentile to judge whether or not you can get in. So I'm going to be taking that test in October, and then pending the results of that test, that's whenever I'll hopefully begin the PhD in fall of 2019. And I know I'm looking at a lot of schools in Lubbock, Dallas. Definitely would love to stay with Texas. That's the number one goal. However, if I have the opportunity to go out of state, there are some other schools that could possibly pull me in through there.
So I asked you earlier, and I told you to hold it because I wanted to hear this on air because I think it's going to be interesting. But how did you go from college, which is like known for like indoctrinating people into like the two-party system, to becoming a libertarian?
Okay, well, it was really interesting because right when I graduated high school in 2009, I had just got done voting for Barack Obama. He was the very first person that I voted for. That having the Obama fever going into college kind of worked out for me because a lot of the professors, a lot of the instructors that I did come into contact with, I was living in San Antonio at the time, going to school at UTSA. There was a lot of left-leaning instructors. You could definitely tell in the way that they lectured, but it was cool for me. Now, one thing that I did enjoy was that there was a Young Americans for Liberty on campus at the time, and there were a couple individuals who had introduced the Libertarian Party to me for the first time. So I'd always kind of romanced with the Libertarian Party for the past 8 years, but after 2012, I started going towards a little bit more right, and just some personal experiences that I had to go through outside of just academically, that kind of played a factor in just kind of how I started to look at life and just kind of see how these policies from the two-party system were just affecting me and my family and our communities in general. So within the past 9 years, since being a Democrat, it's been a journey in itself. And then just putting the cherry on top, just at the state convention, just really kind of just put me in a situation, Daniel, where I tell myself, okay, I know the Libertarian Party is the direction that I was looking for, politically speaking, of course. And it's kind of played a role in my research, and it's kind of played a role a lot in my academic performance, in what I started right now in grad school. So yeah, it's, you know, there's a lot more to it. I always tell myself one day I'll write a book. I have a lot of different little rough drafts. I'm serious. It's going to be one heck of a amazing, it's going to be a work of art in itself. But yeah, that's basically what it is in a nutshell. Just going through personal experiences, being introduced to the message early on, going out into the field, seeing how the policies of Barack Obama definitely affected us during that time, his two-term administration. So that's what it was. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, that's something I don't like to admit is I voted for Obama in 2008, which is funny because, like, I want to say, like, right around that time, I was just getting into, like, the tax protester conspiracies, or, like, maybe right after that. And then, like, you know, it was probably, like, early 2009 when I started seeing some bumper stickers that said, like, mm-hmm. like, who is Ron Paul, or Google Ron Paul, or something like that. And it's like, man, I found out about it. I remember I was mad. I was like, man, I wish I would have found out about this, like, 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, you know, everyone kind of goes through that transition, but of course it's like, because we're raised in a world where you've got two options, and then it's like, eventually we find out about a third and a fourth option, and it's like, oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Why aren't these more publicized? They're so much better.
Absolutely. And I agree with you. And we see a lot of it going on right now in the election season. As you know, Mark Tippetts, he's actually been trying to initiate a drive to kind of get him in to go attend these debates with Lupe Valdez and Governor Abbott. You see at the Larry Sharpe's campaign in New York in his run for governor, a lot of the media pollsters are leaving him out. But it's really good to see that they were able to get over 31,000 voters to exceed their expectations to get on the ballot. So kudos and shout out to them at that accomplishment. But, you know, the media really is starting to take notice of us. And I was going to mention to you also that I think that Gary Johnson's run for the Senate spot in New Mexico has definitely kind of shaken the foundations over there in the political establishment. You've seen him that he was recently polling over 20%, and then the Republican nominee was less than 15%, which is pretty cool that you get to see one of the Republican major two-party members running for the Senate spot in New Mexico, that he's kind of the third party, being that he's less than 15%. So just hopefully trying to get into a live debate, and just hopefully trying to get the media to just fully acknowledge that if you're on the ballot, you deserve a right to be seen by the media nationwide, whatever. You deserve a voice. You deserve to have all these funding opportunities that could help you be included in these things as the Democrats and the Republicans.
Right. And you know, of course, you know, we always talk about how the media censors us. It's not on accident.
No.
But yeah, that's really interesting about Gary Johnson, because it's almost like, it's funny because he used to be governor. Now mm-hmm. he's running for, I don't know if you would call that a lower position or a higher position. It's kind of like a smaller position in a bigger pond,
mm-hmm.
From the same state. But he's, you know, people know him there already because he used to be their governor. So, I'm sure that's got something to do with it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, it really actually brings a lot of recognition for him. I don't know if you saw, he was just recently interviewed on Fox News about 3 or 4 days ago. And that's one of the questions that they asked him, is that, you know, Gary, why do you continue to run and continue to do this and continue to do this? And basically, you know, he's going to keep going until, you know, to fight the good fight. And he is running under the title, you know, Governor Gary Johnson for Senate. I just saw a picture of one of his campaign signs that you could see on his website. So that was pretty cool. So just having that redundant face, especially seeing Gary Johnson that has continuously tried to run for the presidency in 2012 and 2016 and now for the Senate, I think that he's done a really good job at trying to initiate the first step in trying to get some libertarian recognition on the national media scale.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And you know what was interesting is I saw a clip today with Judge Napolitano, who's mm-hmm. he's always been kind of libertarian, but he's never really used the word, especially not mm-hmm. on national TV.
Yeah, Fox News. Yeah,
and yeah, and so he doesn't have his own show now. I guess he's like some consultant of some type. But he was talking about whether or not Trump was going to legalize marijuana or deschedule marijuana or, you know, do something with that. And he just said, like, in one of his, you know, as he's explaining things, he goes, well, maybe it's just the libertarian in me that's, you know, but and I was like, well, that's pretty cool that he used the L word on TV. Mm-hmm. Cause it's, you know, it's, I know that's not like a huge plug, but at the same time, mm-hmm. it's like, there are still people who have like, I still run into people and I meet them and they're like, libertarian, what's that? Mm-hmm. Like, they have no idea.
And there's so many different ways that you could explain it to them too. And it's just finding the right definition to give the right person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cause you know, if you talk to the wrong people and you say, oh yeah, we're all about legalizing drugs, man. Then they're just going to be like, oh
yeah, you're one of those.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's true. You really got to know who you're talking to. But that's something I tell candidates all the time, like know your audience, know who you're talking to. Yes, and
I agree.
Talk to them about it. Like, cause there's, you know, libertarian is like, what's funny about like, so libertarians don't really have this in a way that connects with people, I think, but like, so there's like this, what do they call it? Like an archetype or like, so the Democrats are like, the nurturing mother type, and the Republicans are like the strict father type. Mm-hmm. And the libertarians are just kind of like, what are they? And I really haven't heard like a good, like, mm-hmm. you know, besides like the stoner hippies or, you know, whatever, like, you know, there's like, which doesn't even fit the bill because, you know, they were all like probably anti-war enough to be anti-Second mm-hmm. Amendment.
Yeah.
So, you know, what is that like? What is that, you know, definition of what a libertarian is? Because if you can say, because there's actually like a lot of, you know, I mean, you study political science. There's probably like mm-hmm. tons of research to back that up. Like they mm-hmm. say, you know, people that live in families with a strong father figure usually vote Republican, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. And then, you know, so it's, and I always think it's funny because I look at it like, so we flip flop, like, especially from president, but also Congress and everything else, we flip flop Democrat, Republican, and it's almost like, you know, we're the kids asking our parents, hey, can we have weed yet? And it's like, and then the father says no. So, okay, well, let's elect mother and ask mother can we have weed yet? No. Okay. No. Well, let's go ask father again.
Well, I think maybe we should just look at the Libertarian Party should be that stepfather or that stepmother figure, kind of just like that cool uncle or cool aunt or something along those lines. Maybe that cool cousin or something.
The cool uncle. Here, yeah, go smoke it. Like, just don't tell your parents.
Like, exactly. That's exactly what I would say. It's just like, look, you don't understand what this is now, but trust me, it's just like, this is liberty. You're going to know about this later on. Don't tell your mom or dad.
Exactly.
But, and that's,
that's funny.
I just pictured this guy just like, here, just go, don't tell your mother.
Yeah. Man. But the funny thing is, like, if you go and try to sell that to, like, you know, to the younger generation, you could probably sell that pretty well because they're sick of politicians. But then to the older generations, they're like, you know, they think the politicians are doing a good job in controlling everybody and making sure there's no madness and mayhem on the streets. Mm-hmm. And so they'd be like, oh no, we don't want that crazy uncle around here. So it's almost like you can't even, you know, promote that to somebody else. But, you know, at the same time, I guess that's still the same dynamic you have between the Democrats and the Republicans fighting it out.
Yeah, so. Definitely. And like I was just going to say, if you're using that uncle image of the Libertarian Party to attract the younger generation, it would be wise to try to, like, maybe utilize a different image when you're trying to project our message towards older generations of individuals. Maybe have it be like the brother or sister or whatever, just kind of like that, hey, everything's going to be okay, you know, we're all a family, you know, kind of feel, rather than that radical we're gonna let everyone do every single drug that they want to do under the sun.
here we go the libertarian is the family therapist.
Yeah, it's like we're coming in and we're at an intervention. It's like, look, this is what I'm gonna do. Everyone's gonna have the freedom to do anything they want.
Oh man. Yeah, and just stop, you guys, stop fighting each other. Yeah, I was actually thinking, like, how great would it be to have, like, a political convention where we lock everybody in a room and we give them, like, a bunch of those styrofoam bats and just let them, you know, beat the crap out of each other?
It would be epic. It would be, just have, like, that would be great. That would be funny. I'm just picturing a lot of politicians that I would personally want to beat with the styrofoam bats myself.
That would be...
Us libertarians.
Forget the debates.
Yeah. Let's just settle for, let's do a steel cage match right now.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Take it up a notch.
Oh, man. So, man, so off topic from that, what's, man, what is taxation?
Well, let me see. It is 8:22 Central Time, and last time I checked, taxation is still theft. It doesn't matter how much time passes by, doesn't matter past, present, or future, taxation is still and always will be theft.
Absolutely, man. I, you know what's funny? I got a call from an old friend a couple nights ago, and I was talking to him, and so he's learning to program, and like all my friends always come up, yeah, man, I want to learn to program, and I always talk to him for like an hour and you know, give him tips and advice on how to learn and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just hadn't talked in so long, so I, you know, I told him I'm running for president unofficially, and so like for the next like 3 or 4 hours he was just like asking me all these questions, like, you know, and he started out with, you know, well, who's going to build the roads? And
yeah,
it was hilarious because we, you know, we've had like really long talks like this before, but this was just like, you know, and it was just ongoing question after question of, you know, okay, well, how about this? And how about that? And mm-hmm. it was actually really insightful because, you know, they were all good questions, but yeah, it was all taxation is theft.
That's pretty much what the moral of the story should be.
Yeah, was it was.
Just, yeah,
I'm trying to think of like, you know, what some of these questions were, but it was like, you know, ultimately, you know, okay, so yeah, so what if there are a few things that government does well, and you know, okay, if you expect private businesses to do them, they might not get done because they might not be in the business's best interest, or you know, mm-hmm. something like that. And I'm like, okay, well, the alternative is. You condone an organization of like over 1 million people to go around stealing from 320 million people, and you have this mass theft. Which one would you prefer? And he's like, well, moral dilemma.
Yeah.
And you know, it's crazy because he grew up in California with me. He's okay. Like super left, and so.
A
I know
super left.
Yeah, but I mean, well, but he's very open-minded. Yeah. He's really smart. So you know, he's as much as like he comes from the left, like he's still open-minded to everything, and which is why, you know, he could ask questions for 4 hours. But what was interesting is like when you put that kind of moral dilemma there, then it's like, ah, okay, well, do I really want to condone theft?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the old question of if you pull the lever, the train's going to kill one person, but if you don't pull the lever, it's going to kill 100 people.
Yeah.
Which one is more moral or immoral? Yeah, that's pretty interesting. But at the same time, you know, most voters don't think about that stuff, and they probably don't want to think about it if you bring it up. I don't know.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think there's a lot of times in every presidential election, especially, you have a lot of people that aren't really concerned with the, I guess, knowing what the truth is. I don't know. There's a lot of people that have seen this meme where it's like a political cartoon where you have, it's like a little booth where you have people with a long line of people going up to this one booth on the right. And then there's nobody on the one on the left, and the one on the left says unpleasant truths, and the people on the right, where all the people have the line at, it's just, I don't know, it could just be like
political
lies.
Bullshit or lies.
you know, BS, lies, comfortable lies, you know, slaughter, whatever, and they're just going towards it. I think one thing that I personally enjoy and I really love about our party is that we really kind of twisted the morals, and we're willing to go a little bit deeper and kind of really take the risks and trying to be a little bit radical and making people kind of answer these questions. Because at the end of the day, I feel that whenever we start discussing morality and these moral issues and what our platform and our policies end up saying or end up doing to a certain group of people, by the individual themselves being introduced to our message, and as much as they may dislike it or hate it or whatever, they get to have that question within themselves, and it's up to them to make that personal decision within them. It's not just like a simple decision of saying, oh, I'm going to vote Democrat or Republican. It's like with our message and them knowing that there are these uncomfortable truths about what the government is doing. There are these uncomfortable realities of knowing that we're $20+ trillion in our national debt, only going to is spiraling out of control right now as we speak. The debt clod is just booming. But if we were able to just introduce these little facts and these little uncomfortable truths to our constituents and all over our state and all over our country, I really think that we can start changing the American populace, the American voter, definitely the voting population. And I think that that can increase turnout just in itself. We really need to introduce who we are.
Absolutely. And it's mm-hmm. funny because it's like, I kind of look at it like this, like the, you know, the left and the right are a circus and we're over here. We're like the sideshow, but no one's paying attention to us because we're kind of like the small act. Yeah. But then, so it's kind of like, we have to do something crazy that gets a lot of attention, but we have to be able to follow through with it to something that's like, you know, that makes people want it, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like there's a couple examples that come to mind. Like, so Brian Ellison started the Arm the Homeless thing, and then mm-hmm. this other guy, Murdoch, I think it's Murdoch Pisgotti or something like that. Mm-hmm. came up with Arm the Armless, and like as soon as I don't know if you heard about this, so the Supreme Court just ruled on, like, you know, the 3D printed guns and whatever, and so he started this thing, he's going to arm the armless, which is basically the same thing, just, you know, 3D print guns for the homeless. And for both of them, it's like, when I first heard him, I was like, okay, this sounds like a little bit radical and extreme. And you know, I had my own concerns, like, you know, I know there are people who are homeless who are mentally ill and you know, some other stuff. This could be dangerous. Mm-hmm. But you know, the way they explain themselves, where, you know, they're obviously talking to these people first, they're meeting with them, they know who they are. They're, mm-hmm. they're not just like, you know, randomly here, first one who wants it gets it. And then at the same time, you know, like Murdoch was explaining in one of his interviews that, you know, these people, they're out there already.
Absolutely.
If they're a threat, they're already doing things. If they're, you know, they'd probably be in jail. They're, you know, if they're, you know, they have access to sharp objects. They have access to do whatever, you know, they could be, you know, walking in the middle of the night, throwing bricks in the windows of all the cars and, you know, just doing all this damage and stabbing people. They could, but they're not, because that's not, you know, that's not how they live their lives. That's not, yeah. You know, and so giving them guns, especially like this 3D printed gun, is just like a one-off, one shot thing. You can't reload it or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's you're really not creating a danger, but you are giving them protection against, you know, especially in cities like I think Denver is one of them, where, you know, right before the cold comes, they always kick them out on the street. They tear up their tents.
Yeah, I've seen that. That's terrible. Yeah.
And so, well, shit, I guarantee you those cops aren't going to do it if they think all those guys are armed in there.
Armed. Yeah. Well, absolutely. Well, then I think that's something in itself. It's time to really get these areas that do have impose those policies that do hurt the homeless like that. If they are going to be armed, then it's time they need to look at themselves and be like, okay, we've obviously been doing this wrong. We know that they're going to possibly be armed, and we know that we can't kick them out. So should have just ended, you know, they'll hopefully find another solution in itself instead of kicking them out, you know, for the next time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's so stupid because they're like, you know, there are people who want to help them, and that becomes a crime too. Like, you know, churches used to do so much. Like, you know, everyone complains now that churches are like, you know, they're scams and they're just, you know, stealing money and all this. But which may be true for a lot of them. But the reality is, you know, going back even like a few hundred years, churches used to, like, they used to have volunteer nurses. They provide like basic medical staff, you know, beds, like homeless shelters, food, all this stuff. And like now you hear about, like, you know, I see churches getting fined for, you know, for letting homeless people sleep, you know, in the church.
Yeah, pretty much using them as sanctuaries. Yeah.
Yeah. They get arrested for going out and handing out food. And it's like, wait, okay, so it's illegal to be homeless, but it's illegal for someone else to, like, create a home for them to go into. You know, what exactly is your story here? You can't have it both ways. You're setting people up for worse failure just because, like, okay, they don't live their lives the way you live your life. Okay, big deal. That, like, that goes back to the whole thing about not everyone is going to live their life the way you do. Like, get over it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's like, no matter what, it's like nobody else is going to live the same life that you're going to also, obviously, that you're going to live. But then also people at the same time won't also view the same way that you view life as well. And I think that that's something that's always got to be understood as well. It's just that we may have these different lives. We may have these different perceptions of, you know, of what you just said, that this is they are being set up for failure. They are being set up to pretty much commit a crime before the crime's even committed. You've already committed the crime. If you already have these intentions going in, like the church who's trying to provide shelter for the homeless, people are already committing these types of crimes without, you see what I'm going at? Like, they're already there by these policies that are being implemented like that.
So let's go way off topic from this, because I saw some pretty ridiculous shit on the interwebs today. What do you think about the front hole?
The front hole?
Yeah. Have you heard about this?
Sock it to me. What is it? In okay. Like, what is it?
So now, and apparently
I've heard of it.
apparently this wasn't even the trans community that came up with this, but the, it was like some, yeah. So you can't call a vagina anymore. It's now the front hole, which
I heard about that. Yeah.
Which, now
that
yeah.
Now, like, I know. Okay.
The internet is going crazy.
Front hole.
Man. I mean, like, I see this stuff and I'm like, okay, look, I get it. There's, you know, you've got trans people, you've got transphobic people. They're at war with each other. But then, like, at some point you have to look and say, like, okay, this is kind of ridiculous. You know, how far is this going to go?
Yeah. Like, and how much farther? And it's like, the more extreme that they want to go, it's like something really serious could, like, happen. I really think that they're really going way over. It's just one of those things, Daniel, where I just feel it's just at some point the bubble's going to pop, man. And it's just like, I just think that whether it's, how much extreme can you get from that? And the sad thing is that when these things happen, I feel that individuals that I choose to just ignore it. But then again, it just becomes a situation where if it starts to affect me personally, which in these areas where you have a high trans community, where it kind of can affect you if you have that type of community as your area, your populace.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's really interesting. Like, you have you definitely have people like in isolated communities. But then, of course, there's like when communities come together, there's always, you know, interaction between people in these communities. And it's like, it's, you know, what's funny is, like, okay, so let's talk about, like, the bathroom situation, right?
Okay.
So, like, they're trying to say, okay, we have male bathrooms, we have female bathrooms. We need one, like, okay, so we need one for trans. Okay, so now you got three. Now there's, like, already, like, 70 something genders, right? So, like, okay, so, like, each McDonald's is supposed to have 70 restrooms. Why don't we, and it's like, okay, fine, okay, I understand, like, you know, you want to be respected the same as everybody else. So, but here's like a maybe possibly more reasonable solution to that. And I don't know who's like even pushing these ideas. Like if it's, is it really like, you know, people who fall into these categories, or is it like just some obnoxious trolls? I mean, like, man, some of the stuff I've seen from Flat Earth has like convinced me that like the people running it are not actually flat earthers. They're just like really great internet trolls. Like they're just like coming up with this shit to see who's going to fall for it. And like, and people start following it. And so like, I wonder the same thing about, you know, like whether it's the bathroom thing or anything else. Cause like, I'm always looking at it like, okay, well, let's see. The last big concert I went to was outdoors, and they had like 1,000 porta potties in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, did they need like genders written on any single one of them? No, it's like, and so if you look at restrooms and start saying, well, why don't you, and you go to a gas station and it's like, it's one restroom. It doesn't need to have a men's and a women's on it. It's just, you know, like, isn't that more efficient? And like, realistically, you know, you want equality for men and women. Whenever you go to a bar and it's like the line to the women's room is around the corner, and then the guys is really short. Well, that's not equality. Why not just make them all wait in the same line for, you know, a different stall? It's such a stupid argument because, you know, like, when has this actually caused any real harm to anybody the way that it's been?
Exactly. I don't think it really has caused anyone a lot of harm, because it's just funny. I feel that, you know, the whole thing with the restroom bathroom issue, I feel that trans people have been going into all of these restrooms for the past few decades. And it's like, why all of a sudden are we just making it an issue now? Right. And I agree with kind of how you were tying it with the flat earthers and all that. It's just like, you know, whenever there's a different something to really just rally up the people or the base or whatever, and it's an attempt in the media or whatever, issues like these can be kind of overthrown all over the place. And it definitely can be an issue that you just kind of look at it and it's a very sad situation for me, honestly, because I just think that it's an issue that really doesn't hurt anybody. At the end of the day, I've heard people, because I work retail, I work at Barnes & Noble, and I know I've had only like a couple customers in the past year and a half that have personally come up to me specifically asking me how I felt about the restrooms, because Barnes and Noble took a stance. I think it was when this was a hot topic, the company took a stance about 2 years ago, basically, you know, acknowledging, basically kept it up to the states, you know, whatever it is, you know, it's not really a big issue to us. And people have caught wind of that, and they're very upset, especially in this area where we have a very high conservative base here in Corpus Christi. People just get so furious about it. I'm like, how is it really making you hurt this bad? It's just like, how is it really making you get this angry? It's not a big deal to me, honestly.
Especially when like so many people, I mean, like it's like so many people that it's like a joke that like nobody likes using public restrooms in the first place. You know, it's it's pretty funny. But, you know, to that same effect, you know, it's like so there was the woman who was murdered by the illegal immigrant. Right.
Yeah.
Molly
Tibbetts. Yeah.
Yeah. And so everybody's like, oh, she was murdered by an illegal immigrant. And it's like, OK, yeah, but how many other murders were committed the same day, and how many of those other murders were committed by U.S. citizens?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really like they just take, like, you know, whatever they can to fuel a fight. And it almost seems like, you know, a lot of these fights are just the divide and conquer fights. Like, you know, they're just trying to divide us any way they can so that we'll not pay attention to the real stuff, like the $21 trillion debt, which goes up by like $100 million every second or whatever it is. It's I wonder how much of this is like to blame on social media, because we have, we have the traditional media and then we have the social media. They can completely control the traditional media. The social media, they can't control so much. And that's when like a lot of, you know, a lot of the conspiracy theories and stuff started coming up, and then like a lot of the government started getting exposed on a lot of real stuff because of that. And so I'm wondering if, like, if, you know, is someone secretly sitting behind the scenes, you know, like CIA, not to mention the names, that's like sitting there like, okay, well, so here's the plan. What we're going to do is we're going to come up with a bunch of like ridiculously controversial shit, that we're basically going to throw into the social media sphere. That's going to get everybody talking about complete nonsense so that they don't pay attention to the real things. And like, I'm wondering how effective that would be, because the reality is, as much as you think like, okay, I'm just going to throw some bullshit in there and like all the internet trolls are going to fight over it, the reality is all the rational people start fighting over it too, because they're not fighting, you know, they're not really fighting so much over the, you know, the actual content of what that is, but they're fighting over, you know, oh, I can't believe these idiots are actually fighting over this. So exactly. It's like, yeah, it's insane. And so, you know, you have everybody distracted from like all different angles, and wow.
It's crazy. And it's just like you said, I really do think that there are people that, whether it's the CIA or not, I don't know, but I really do think that there is a deeper motive in kind of what we see, especially now with a lot that you see with Facebook now, and just kind of how important, you know, Facebook has been in terms of political advertising. I don't know about you. I don't know if you've had to do it with your page, but I know for anybody out there who's trying to publicize any type of political content, Facebook makes sure that it's coming from you, whether it requires them, you have to send them a photo of your driver's license. You have you have to really go out of your way now. And it's kind of being one of those things where topics like these, we don't really know where they're coming from exactly. Just like, you know, Donald Trump said before, it could be the Russians, it could be the Chinese, it could be someone who weighs 400 pounds. It could be, we don't really know what were these specific trigger trends are coming from. But I do think that their evil intention is to be divisive and to get us, you know, distracted from the real issues that are at hand. And right now there's a lot of serious issues that we really need to really highlight and get the two major parties to really focus on more. And I feel that the only way that we can do that, the only way that we can silence this BS and this crap with all these like trigger trends that we've been thrown at on a daily basis with the media and social media, it's like the Libertarian Party could be that focal point. We have the ability to do it. I think that that's really what our purpose is, basically, especially since we're able to identify and see these very clearly, you know, while they're happening.
I wonder if, so like, I like this word you're using, the trigger trend. I wonder if we can create a trigger trend that's based around an actual real issue. Like, I've always said this, and I know a lot of libertarians are against me on this, that the people who control media, you know, the conversation, you know, whatever you want to call it, they're smart, and they're using tactics that they know work, and yes, for the most part they're immoral. But what if there was a way to use these same tactics in a productive way? You know, it's not, you know, I'm not talking about manipulating people. I'm not talking about lying, you know, fraud, any of that kind of stuff. What I'm talking about is if we can create like a, you know, some sort of like, you know, fighting war, some sort of like totally ridiculous argument of something to bring attention to the national debt, the war on drugs, you know, whatever it is it possible to do that? Or would it simply just, you know, backfire and, you know, create the opposite effect and, you know, how could we use that to our advantage?
Well, I think that it, just like you said, it could be definitely used to our advantage in a way that, the intent is there, and I understand we're kind of trying to create this reverse effect where we bring attention to these issues this way, but I understand it can also backfire because it's obviously going to be recognized by the people who originally do these things the negative way and the immoral way. They're going to know what we're trying to do. If we're able to try to kind of try to beat them at their own game, so to speak, they're going to know how to try to reverse that and make us look like we're the bad people. So in order for us to kind of utilize this, kind of like picking a moment or just picking like a trigger trend in ourselves to try to, we want to try to create a situation where we have to get everybody on board together. We have to get a lot of people focused on what type of issue we want, first of all, to kind of bring up. Is it going to be just the debt? Because I feel that if we try to bring it to a lot of issues, it's going to create a lot of chaos because there's so many different ways that we view these issues. But for the sake of argument, if we were going to do it on the debt, the national debt, there's going to have to be a lot of people to have it understand that how this debt is affecting them. And the only way that we can do it is by bringing to attention, maybe through social media. It would have to be an effort where we kind of basically just force a message. I don't want to use that word force a message, but, you know, definitely create a chance where we're able to get as much people to be exposed to this message as possible, and get them to follow a hashtag trend, get them to follow a lot of our pages on Facebook, et cetera, because it's going to take a moment like that, in my opinion, Daniel, to really get people to wake up. Because I definitely think that sooner or later people will wake up, especially if our debt continues to climb. There's no doubt within about 10 years, a little later than 10 years or so, we're going to start feeling the effects of this debt, and it's not going to be pretty.
I mean, like, what if I'm just thinking about how we could do that. Like, what if we had, like, so these kids that go around, you know, advocating banning all the guns as a two little socialist kids.
Oh. David Hogg again. Yeah.
Yeah. So what if we like got some little poster kids like them and they go around like, you know, yeah, we should borrow another $10 trillion and, you know, and like, so we took something to the extreme just to get to, you know, people to talk about it.
Well, yeah, it would drive attention. That's for sure. And that's what we need. We need to have a moment like that where we do strike up some controversial attention by doing that.
I mean, you know, we can have some kids just saying like, yeah, the government's got unlimited money. They can always just print it. Why don't they just print it? But I don't know. Like, my fear is kind of that you'd have a lot of people that are just like, yeah, why don't they just print it? They would take that seriously. And, you know, and then, of course, if you do the opposite and say, you know, we need to cut spending or we need to cut like all these programs, then it's like, oh, well, it's just normal political conversation and nobody wants to listen to that. I mean, unless, you know, I can figure out how to do that with my, you know, not my debt thing where we're just not going to pay it off. But yeah. At the same time, that sounds, I don't know, maybe I got to find a couple kids that'll just go on TV and make it sound good.
There's something that we can definitely do. And I think that's something, you know, attracting the youth vote is one thing that we could definitely utilize for these type of messages. I know that youth, I talk to a lot of youth, and whenever I try to engage them in the Libertarian Party, and it's no doubt in my mind that you could find some youngsters that would be out there willing to bring this message out in the most radical way possible. We need to take advantage of that energy that these young people do have. So if you're gonna definitely start a project like that, definitely keep me in the loop, and we will.
Definitely, man.
I'm just so excited. Just basically anything that we can do to basically just move us forward, because that's really what I've been here ever since I became a member, man. It's just the Libertarian Party right now has just kind of put me in a position where I'm interested in just seeing it grow. It's just, it has to continue to grow. It has to get better, and we're going to have to be the ones to do it and bring attention to all these issues at hand.
Definitely. So I got a question in the comments. Jay's asking, how do we feel about gun-free zones? I think the answer is pretty obvious, but man, what do you say about that?
Gun-free zones? You know, and here's the thing, and it's, first of all, I think that gun-free zones, I guess I would ask, where it depends on where you're wanting these types of zones to be. If you're a business, I feel that any type of business has every right to dictate whether or not they want gun-free areas. Certain schools, you know, have every right, depending on whether or not they're private schools or if they're government schools. But if you would have to ask me point blank if I think that we should have gun-free zones, I would like to say no. But at the end of the day, it falls onto the establishment person.
Right.
Yeah.
So if it was your school, you wouldn't make it a gun-free zone.
If it was my school, I tell you what, which I'm trying to cook up. If Victor Hinojosa had his own private school, I would definitely allow open carry or concealed carry for my students and for my staff. I would offer a program where if you would like to get a concealed carry license, if you would like to learn how to operate a gun, the school would offer classes for the faculty. I would like to do what the president is doing and give them a little bit more of a raise just so that they have that certification. But yeah, I would have my facilities, I would have my institutions be gun free.
And that actually brings up a, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I'm sorry, would not be gun free. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that brings up a good question about, like, the, you know, I wasn't born back in that time, but I've seen a lot of good pictures of it where they have, like, you know, kids at school, like in the gym, like shooting with, guessing probably BB guns, but, you know, training them to use guns. And it's like, okay, well, I don't see anything wrong with that. Like,
there isn't wrong. And at some point in time, you have people that would drive pickup trucks in high school, especially here in Texas. I know, and definitely in my hometown, you had people. I've heard stories from a lot of my parents that when our grandparents were going to high school, some people would have a shotgun just for hunting purposes. But they'd be able to drive it up, put it in their back of their car, and then not even worry about it. But at some point in time, it's like we kind of lost our youth. We kind of lost ourselves in how we view guns and how we are educated on guns is not really the best. But I think if more people understood them and just kind of understood a little bit of what the Second Amendment was, that we could get over this fear that we can be a society that is armed because our constitutional right says that we have that ability to do so, and we should utilize it.
Absolutely. Man, I had a thought a minute ago and I totally lost it.
I know the feeling. Been there, done that many times.
Let's see. So Jay, the person who asked that question, said, great answer. Education is key.
Oh, it definitely is.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's like we're so. It's like when you have a fear of something, the best way to get over that fear is to face the fear, educate yourself. Like, you know, fear comes from a misunderstanding or a lack of knowledge about something. And it seems like the response this day is to just, like, bury your head in the sand about it. Like, the people you see out there advocating for gun control and gun confiscation, they don't even know, like, how a gun works. Like,
yeah.
It's pretty insane. And it's like a little bit of education goes a long way. I mean, like, shit, I grew up in California and, like, we were like afraid of guns, or was anyway, or like a lot. 'Cause, you know, we had DARE came to school and, like, teach us that guns are bad and all this other shit, all kinds of nonsense. I know a lawyer whose son came home from school and said, oh yeah, DARE taught us that if we're ever arrested, don't hire a lawyer because it makes you look guilty.
Yeah, right. Yeah, oh, that's, man, why we have people taking plea deals who are innocent and end up having to take the guilty fall.
how many fucking people, like, how many kids, like, went home and told their parents that, and their parents were probably like, oh yeah, that sounds like a good idea, because they weren't lawyers either. They were, you know,
exactly.
It's so fucked up. And man, I watched this video. I did a little live stream about it this morning. I saw this. Sorry, there's dog butt on the screen over here. So there were these two kids that were driving around and they got stopped for probably driving while black. And, you know, the cop comes up and the cops are like super polite and, you know, they're like, oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. We just want to, you know, well, it smells like marijuana. And that was the whole thing. It smells like marijuana. They just kept saying that. And yeah. they were asking all these stupid questions. They got the guy out of the car, got him into the back seat of the police car, put, you know, handcuffs on him and everything. And they just started searching the car. And, you know, this is basically an illegal search. And then once it's all done, I think they found like a Gatorade bottle that had some alcohol in it, right? And so they're mm-hmm. basically saying, okay, you're going to get rid of this alcohol, right? And the kid's like, yeah, yeah, I'll get rid of the alcohol if it makes you happy. He's like, okay, well, if you get rid of the alcohol, we'll let you go and we're not gonna arrest you and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But let's make something clear. Your car smelled like weed, right? And the kid's like, what? No, it didn't smell like weed. Like, we don't have any weed. You guys weren't hanging out with someone that had weed? No, we weren't hanging out with any. Well, what about all the shake on the floor? There's no shake on the floor, man. There's no, like, you know, they yeah. found nothing in the car. And I'm like, and I'm sitting there watching this and I'm like, these cops are, they're basically trying to get this kid to confess that to something that didn't happen, that they smelled like weed, so that now this illegal search was now a legal search.
And yeah, I'm like, terrible.
Are you fucking kidding me?
And it's sad I know that happens all the time, man. Everywhere.
I know. And what's really bad about it is like these police are like, they're really nice the whole time. They're like really polite. So most of the people watching this video are like, oh, those were good cops. They were just investigating a crime and blah, blah, blah. No, they violated the fuck out of these kids' rights. And yeah, it's, you know, it's like when they're beating the shit out of you and then they're yelling, stop resisting, stop resisting. You know, it's complete nonsense. I hate to laugh at that shit, but it's like, it's just so ridiculous. Like, you know, it sounds like a comedy movie or something, like something so.
You wouldn't have expected it to occur like that, but it's a sad situation, Daniel, because it like I said earlier, it happens all the time and it happens every single day. Now, I would challenge our viewers to definitely look this up. I would want to see if there is a lot more. You see a lot of these bad police acts in smaller towns. Just how, you know, there's that perceived notion that smaller towns maybe have like a higher corruption rate or something like that. So I would definitely want to see, you know, in these smaller areas where you have cops in these areas that are only driven just by money, by financial or whatever type of gain that they need. And they do these tactics to get these people to admit to these crimes. And if they're arrested, you know, the intimidation game is so high that it would make anybody, you know, take a plea deal and say that you're guilty when you're not. So there's definitely a lot of work that needs to be done there. But I would really challenge and see exactly where exactly are these higher rates of I guess, this type of corruption that's within the police system.
Yeah, absolutely.
How getting these charges.
And it's a pretty well-known fact that like 80% of or 90% of all criminal charges end with a plea in the first place. So, I mean, yeah, it's I don't know, you know, what's the difference going to be in a big city? It's 85 and in a small town it's you know 92 or something. You know, it's whatever it is, it's insane. Yeah, it's you know, it's corrupt to the core, and everybody says, you know, oh, it's just a few bad apples, but it's like, no, you've got I'm starting to look at it like this way, especially since talking to you know, a couple of these guys who are running for sheriff that are mm-hmm. that are you know, they've defined it as two separate things. Like there's the police officers who are, or the order followers, and then you've got the peacekeepers or the peace officers. And you know, either you're following orders and you're arresting everybody because that's what your job is,
exactly,
or you're just out there to keep the peace. And if you think about it, like, so, you know, there's a lot of anarchists that say, you know, all cops are bad because they all work for the system, they all enforce the laws and everything else. At the same time, the elected sheriff is not so much that, because it's really like, you know, in an anarchist society, you might say, okay, we're going to have private security, or we're going to, you know, we have a small town, we're going to elect one person to be the night watch. And that's really the sheriff's job. It's not, it's it, like, you know, if a fight breaks out, he'll be the one to show up and say, hey, break up the fight.
Absolutely.
If somebody murders someone, he'll be the one to go around and catch him. And it's not supposed to be this, you know, working for the state and arresting people. Now, of course, that's usually what it ends up being. But the sheriff's position alone is not, it's not that. It doesn't need to be that. The sheriff has the ability to say, we're not going to enforce these laws. We're not going to, you know, do all this other shit. We're here to keep the peace. And that's all we're going to do. We just need more sheriffs to kind of recognize that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So Jeff's asking a question. If we change the national currency, will we still owe the debt? And who do we owe it to?
That's a really interesting.
I think Obama made a joke about printing a $1 trillion coin or a $20 yeah. trillion dollar coin to print out, you know, just to pay it off. And what's interesting is that would be legal. But yeah, I mean, hey, what I say is like, it's really not necessary. It's kind of like, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, what I would say is just, it would be pretty much the nicest way, just like you described, to be able to print out something like that. Cause at the end of the day, it's like, what is the currency? What is currency? What is
right.
the type of, you know, money system that we have right now in the country is horrible, especially where we know where the source is, the Federal Reserve. That's basically, it's private, it's fishy, and it's sad to know that that's really where the money's coming from. Because just to pretty much answer his question, we would owe all that money to them, I would feel. If we're not able to, even if we were to change our currency, I feel that at the end of the day, we would still kind of have that debt looming over us. Like, I don't know how we'd be able to kind of cancel that out if we were to move to a new currency. I don't know what you feel about that, but
yeah,
that's what I feel would happen.
So let's say ultimately, like, in order to do that, you'd have to create a new currency that would have to be more valuable so that you could, you know, basically use one currency to pay off the old one, but ultimately, here's the thing, like, even if it's like, say, Bitcoin and everybody. Okay. So here's the thing with debt, right? So with inflation, the value of a currency goes down, which means it's easier to obtain that currency, right? So let's say, for example, you have, let's say you sell apples, right? So you sell an apple today for $1, the currency inflates. So tomorrow you sell an apple for $100, right? Well, if you have $1,000 in debt on day one, you have to sell 1,000 apples. But now that an apple, you get $100 for it, you only have to sell 10 of them, right? So yeah. Inflation actually makes your debt easier to pay off. So if you could inflate one currency or devalue a currency, then it makes debt in that currency easier to pay off. Now, it doesn't. So let's take like Bitcoin, for example.
Mm-hmm.
When the value of Bitcoin goes up, the value of the dollar goes down against Bitcoin, maybe not against other currencies, but
yeah.
In that dynamic, one goes up, the other one goes down. If everybody starts saying, hey, we're not going to use the dollar anymore, and they all start switching into other currencies, whether it's, you know, euros, gold, silver, mm-hmm. Bitcoin, whatever it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, and whatever.
Then you're basically devaluing the dollar. Everyone's got them. Everyone's trying to get rid of them. You have, you know, you might have what's going on in what went on in Zimbabwe. You might have Zimbabwe was more of a printing issue. So they had like, mm-hmm. you know, shit tons of paper. But here it would just be like, people want to get rid of it. They don't want it anymore. They're selling it. They're selling all their dollars for Bitcoins and all these other currencies. And so now like all this money's left over, you can easily go and say, oh, well, I have one Bitcoin. I'll sell it to you for, you know, oh, you've got $10 million. I'll take those $10 million. And now you can go pay off your $20 trillion debt pretty easily because, you know, there's nothing there. But more realistically, I look at it like, okay, well, why do we have to pay off this debt in the first place?
Yeah.
Why don't we just say, okay, we're going to stop making payments, and what are they going to do? Sue us? And, you know, if they sue us, say, okay, well, what, okay, you know, this would be a civil lawsuit. Mm-hmm. First of all, in order to sue the United States government, you need to get the United States government consent. So there's a little constitutional loophole there.
Yeah.
But let's say we give it to him. Okay, well, it's a civil lawsuit, so you're asking for us to make you whole again. Well, what did the Federal Reserve lend to us in order to create this debt? Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, that's what it was.
So
nothing.
Yeah, so, okay, well, how do we make them whole again if they gave us nothing and now they have some debt, which is imaginary? Like, how do we make them whole again? I mean, we could give them $5 and tell them, see ya. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
There's really no need to pay it off, in my opinion. And that's, I mean, that's one of the platforms of my campaign is, you know, the United States government, and I don't like to use the word we because we didn't borrow the money. Yeah. That's why I say it's not my debt. I didn't ask for it. I didn't borrow it. I didn't receive it. I didn't sign for it. I didn't spend it. I'm not going to pay it back. And neither should you. But on top of that, the U.S. Mint owns the presses. They buy the paper. They pay for the ink. They pay for the employees to print the money. And somehow that's called borrowing. It makes absolutely no sense, right?
Yeah.
So it's really like, you know, it's really more like the United States government is paying a licensing fee to put the name Federal Reserve on the bills, which is total bullshit.
It's terrible, man. It's and we didn't have to be this way. It didn't have to be this way. And that's the saddest part, is that this all began like a little less than 100 years ago. Well, a little over 100 years ago. It's crazy to see that within a century, so much has happened. And we cannot allow it to go on like this for another 100 years, that's for sure. Because we at the end of the day, we don't know what will happen if we continue to increase in debt.
Yeah, it's, I mean, they've been doing a really great job of inflating at such a slow rate that we haven't seen any dramatic changes.
Yeah. But,
you know, really all it's doing is, you know, it's a numbers game. On paper, nobody borrowed anything from anybody, but now it creates, like, you know, we created this system of, okay, well, now they have, now there's debt, and then there's interest on top of that, so the debt's going to keep growing. And then there's borrowing, like, you know, more borrowing, and it just creates it like a vacuum, and it creates a cash flow for these banks, which is, you know, it's, there's so many of these scams out there. Like, there's the IRS does one too. If you owe money to the IRS, they'll put you on payment plans, but they'll give you like some ridiculously high interest rate that's like 10 or 15% on, like, you know, let's say a $30,000, you know, debt. And then they work it out so that the payments are barely paying the interest. So at the end of the day, basically, you know, 5 years later, you still owe them 30 grand. And this is like the IRS, you know, trying to play
the game. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the IRS who's like, oh, you're just paying your fair share. And it's like, wait a minute. Like, how much money did I give you already? And I'm still like, at the beginning, this is insane. It's and some people will say that, you know, the IRS isn't even part of the government. It's a private corporation that works for the Federal Reserve. I won't go that far, but it's yeah. I mean, it's pretty fucking close, but
might as well just hold hands, right?
Yeah, it's insane. Anyway, man, we're kind of at our time.
Awesome.
But do you have any websites you want to plug for anything you're working on?
Right now, I'm not really having any major projects. I'll have some major projects that I will start advertising a lot on my Facebook page. You guys can go on my Facebook right now. Just look me up, Victor Hinojosa, and add me on Facebook. I just got a Twitter. You guys can add me at Real Victor HLP Texas, LPTX, and we'll just kind of go from there right now. My main focus is just trying to do what we can to get our candidates elected. And right now, definitely, you know, go and support Mark Tippett, go and support Kerry McKinnon, Daniel Tennis, if you're in this area, all of our candidates, all over the great state of Texas. Just let's all try to get us in there. Let's just try to end this. Let's break this duopoly.
Definitely. And are you, I want to say Mark's going to be there, but are you going to be at the Free the Weed?
The Cannafest?
Cannafest, yes.
I'm going to try. I really would like to. I know I've already had a friend of mine also message me, let me know. I think it's in Crystal Beach? Crystal Beach, yeah. Yep. That's about 5 hours from where I'm at right now. So I will definitely try to make it. I would love to, but if not, I've already mentioned that I really will be attending one of those events, because the Open Carry Cannabis Walks, the Free the Weed movement in Texas, I've said repeatedly, is just a really great movement. And we've had, you know, Corey Watkins, a lot of great people that have really been doing really well for the movement. So just a shout out to all of them and all the hard work that they're continuing to do, because it's really paying off.
Absolutely.
But yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Well, maybe I'll see you there.
I hope so, man. And then we'll talk more about this, but I've really appreciated it. I'm just happy to be part of this family, man.
Absolutely. All right, man. Well, it's been good talking with you, and we'll see you again soon. And taxation is theft.
Absolutely. Always. And it will, past, present, or future.